Quake 3 Arena. It's your brainchild in the game with multiplayer. It's a single player game. When or what was the thing that turned you around?
Well, we've always had, you know, we've always been doing basically two separate games. You know, we do the single player game and then we do the multiplayer game or vice versa. And it kind of like flipped between like, on Quake 1's development, we were pretty much kind of developing it, playing around, and the single-player game kind of got put together at the end, while on Quake 2 was the other way around, where we were concentrating on the single-player game and kind of put the multiplayer together at the end. But they've always been fairly different and fairly conflicting styles of play on things, where, like, a lot of the things that work particularly well in single player, where you have to go ahead and, like, give the player these incremental achievements and accomplishments through it, like, get the next best weapon, start off with something really bad, work your way up to, you know, to better things. Things like carrying around inventory stuff, or, you know, even large quantities of ammo, like backpack items and stuff, that just are fundamentally useless in multiplayer when your average lifespan is under a minute on there. Where it's just a very different type of interaction on what people do. And, I mean, on some cases people say, well, just go ahead and continue doing both, but in many cases they do come into pretty much direct conflict on things, on some of the things like which weapon you start off with. There's really, really bad weapons have a place in single player because you have to scale through this large range of monster abilities on something that's like, you know, you might have an order of magnitude difference from one to the, you know, from one at the beginning to one at the end. But in multiplayer, it's actually like much better to start off with a, you know, a reasonably decent weapon where you can actually kill other players with, and you also want to avoid, you know, a certain scaling up of things where in single player you may want to scale a battle all the way up till you're doing, like, you know, you have to do thousands of points of damage against something, which, you know, to kill the big boss at the end, which is, again, very different than what you do in the multiplayer style. And certainly all the level design decisions are completely different for the single player versus multiplayer. And in the end, we look at the stuff and say, most of the people that buy our games don't even finish the single-player aspect, you know. They'll play through it for a while, you know, and get kind of their fill of the game. And, I mean, we don't have actual real statistics on this, but just from, you know, basic sampling of people that have played the game, you know, I think that it's a minority of people that actually even experience all of the levels in the single-player game.
Because again, reflection on your single, on the quality of the single-player game?
I think that that's actually more a matter of the way any kind of skill-based game where you've got where it gets harder and harder as you go through, you know, you're going to just like kind of like reach the limits for some people, or if you make it not very skill based, where you just kind of like plow your way through, then a lot of times people will just wind up saying, it's like, oh, I've experienced this game, I've played through 20 levels of it, I had a good time, and, you know, kind of just like, you know, wander off at that point. While the multiplayer stuff, like, we've seen so many people, the original Quake 1 with 4 deathmatch levels that people really play, you know, and people have been playing that for like 2 years and they still play that. Mm-hmm. And we look at that and say, it's like, that's extremely good value for, you know, for the consumer there. And if we can do something where all of our media gets used, I mean, that's one important point. I want everything that we do to be something that people actually see, where a lot of times, like, people that have done the last 5 or 10 levels in the single-player game, people may actually never even get to that. And even when they, like, the early levels, say the levels around kind of a third of the way through, most people will play through those, but they still only, like, experience the media once, you know. They get through the area, then they're past it, and then they're done with that, and then they don't go back and go see it again. Where you've got the level design people that, you know, will spend weeks on just these little areas that people are just going to kind of go, oh, that's kind of nice, walk right through it. Where when we get to design things around kind of the continuous steady state environment on things, then it's like there may be millions of man hours played in, you know, in every single level then, because they can go ahead and be experienced over and over again and get sorted out like that. And I think that's going to be a really good thing. I think that getting away from just, like, plowing your way through lots of media, it's making game development really expensive for companies when you have to just, with each new generation of graphics technology, to fully exploit it, it just takes more and more effort. So if you want to do, the first-person shooters have become almost kind of standardized. You have roughly 30 levels that you go through in the single-player experience, and those same 30 levels that took us, like, a month and a half to do in Wolfenstein, you know, and then, you know, I 9 months to do in Doom, and I, you know, up to a year and a half, and it's just getting worse and worse with that, and there's really no end in sight on there. It's like, as the graphics technologies keep increasing, we can keep spending more and more time on the same 30 levels, and it gets to a point where it just really probably isn't worth it. If you're only going to have something where people just, like, wander through it once, to keep spending more and more time on there, the technology's there. We can do it. We can make this really, you know, lush place like that. But we're just really beginning to question whether that makes sense for that type of experience.
Don't you think, though, that one of the interesting facts is one of the things that I would say, being a fan of the first-person shooter genre, is that the thing that's come along to revitalize my interest in it more than anything else was Half-Life. And ironically, it's done that with, you know, the single-player missions.
I would not say that single-player is, like, a bad direction, but I think single-player and multiplayer are equally viable directions, and I think they can be separated rather than being tied together. Just like there's lots of different styles of games that are, you know, are good games, and one game is not going to try and be, you know, everything to everyone. And I think that the first-person shooter market has reached enough maturity that it's time for going ahead and segmenting it a little bit, you know, where it's not just every first-person game has to cater to everyone in the market. Because, yeah, first-person, the movie style of game about going through and giving a, you know, a movie experience to players, that's been what's been pretty much the dominant style of game for a long time, even when, like, you know, games like Doom and Quake were still, like, sort of movie-type experiences, even though they didn't do a particularly good job at being a compelling single-player experience like that. But still, the idea was, you are this Marine guy, you're going through this, you've got some goal at the end. And, yeah, it's a plenty good style of game, and I think Half-Life did. I think Half-Life actually hit almost the perfect point of being able to bring some new things to the genre without alienating anybody from there. Because if they had gone, like, a half step further, they would have actually pissed off a lot more people wouldn't have liked that. So, I mean, I think they did a really good job there. But I don't think that and we're obviously going in, like, a very different direction with this. And I wouldn't say one's better than the other, but I would say that I think that we'll be able to deliver, like, more gameplay experience, and it's, like, more value for the customer by focusing on things that have the replayability in them. Because anything that is, like, the movie experience, you know, you go through it, and you're kind of, like, done with it. You go through it again, you see the same scripted actions again. It's just not the same thing the second time, because it's, like, putting a lot of emphasis on the first-time experience. And that can be continued, and it can get better and better as things are going on the next couple years, but it's going to become, well, it already is kind of a diminishing returns from a company's standpoint of, it's going to take twice as much work each time to kind of give the same level of brand newness to it, and you start looking at that, and it's like, okay, are we going to spend 3 years on the project, 5 years, and it's, you know, it's getting to the point where if you want to keep, there's only so much you can accomplish by, like, throwing more manpower at stuff, and even there, companies can get themselves into really big trouble putting together, you know, 30 or 40 person teams on things just to generate a lot of media. And I really do think that it's possible to do play experience rather than the story experience. And I think that what's important for the stuff that you're going to keep playing over and over again are, like, the little micro details of it. You know, like, what's happening as you're moving, as you're shooting, as you're getting hit. These are the events that will happen thousands and thousands of times in the gameplay. And I would rather concentrate my focus on those actions, the micro actions, rather than on, like, a scripted scene that you see once, you know, and experience once. While things like tuning damage feedback, so it's like, we do, like, a half dozen things on damage feedback right now, you know, and they're all subtle things that people don't necessarily, like, point out and see, but they're things that, you know, I think have a good overall cumulative feel. Like, you know, as you're getting hit, you're getting pushed, you lose control while, you know, while you're recovering from that, your view kicks, a little head on the status bar turns and kicks in the opposite direction, there's a blood, you know, flash on the screen that's directionally oriented, you know, the crosshair color cues as your color goes down, you know, there's different pain sounds at the different levels, and it's like all of these things are, you know, like, well, none of them stand out as, like, wow, that's a wonderful new thing, but, you know, you just cover the small actions so much that that's what makes the gameplay like feel solidly good after you've played it, you know, over and over again. While a scripted action is really cool the first time you see it, assuming that like it came in at the right time and it wasn't goofed up and somebody wasn't doing something stupid, which can still happen with with various things, like especially in in Sin, you could get lots of bad things to happen if you just went about things in the wrong way, and you could get things in messed up positions. But, you know, the canned... It really does come down to a matter of personal preference. I've never really enjoyed producing those types of one-shot things. I mean, for me, if something doesn't have a general foundation, it's not a fundamental aspect that many things can be built upon, I'd rather not do it. And that actually is a point of contention internally on various things, because a lot of times somebody will say, let's do, you know, this XYZ wonderful thing, and unless I can figure out, like, a good... you know, good underpinnings for it that I think are general enough for multiple things, I usually won't do that. You know, I won't do, like, little one-shot bit hacks in general, because I want to produce something that's, you know, a solid architecture for a lot
more
of things.
More focused on the engine.
Yeah.
Developing the engine as a... That's interesting, because Epic have also gone down this line. They're farming out their single-player mission, their things for their next product. And they're also working solely on the engine and multiplayer, and of course their game format is much the same, much the same kind of thing. I mean, what I've heard said several times today is this should be a game that these people who haven't played first-person shooters and who aren't experts at first-person shooters should be able to enjoy.
Yeah, did they show you through some of the beginner levels?
No, I've sort of thrown in at the deep end.
Okay, because like some of the things that, and this was actually difficult to get our level designers to do, but we've got several levels that have no altitude changes that can be played without looking up or down at all. And I think this is something that, especially when you've got a fervent community, you get people that are so blindsided, that are just so focused in on themselves that they have no recollection of things and they have no, you know, broad scope. Because like everybody just assumes that, you know, running around with free look on the mouse is like the most intuitive thing in the world. Mm. But they've completely forgotten how the first time they tried it, they were staring up at the ceiling backing into lava. And it's like, even right here, you know, I had to like flat out tell some of the level designers, it's like, no, you may not put, you know, an altitude change in here. Assume that someone is playing it with the keyboard. And, you know, and they always come back, it's like saying, but we can't train people, you know, we can't encourage people to do that because don't we want them to learn? But, you know, I think that it's necessary to bring it in at a level where there's no sophisticated elements at the beginning, where you've got a simple layout, no environmental hazards, no falling into lava, no getting crushed by anything, no getting shot in the back by, you know, level shooters. Something where people can jump in and see, you know, this other, you know, a bot standing there where you can work around, line up on him, shoot him, and get some positive feedback. Because a lot of the complicated levels where you have to worry about getting shot from above or below or falling into some environmental hazard, falling off cliffs, that's not the way to bring someone into the gameplay experience. You know, people have to first internalize the basic concepts of, okay, you're controlling your viewpoint, running around the world, find your targets and eliminate them. And, you know, that's the fundamental concept of it. Find the tools necessary to eliminate your opponents. But all the other aspects of, you know, like the environmental hazards, the interesting higher level tactical things about like maintaining altitude and, you know, different means of evasion and all those are not the primary things. Those are the things that you have to introduce later, you know, after people have begun to learn the basic things. Because the basic things, like we've seen when we take people like some mainstream news people and stuff that aren't really game players, and you put them in there and you set them down and say, it's like, okay, you move around like this. See that thing over there? That's your friend over there. You know, it's like, now go kill him. And it's like people, when they're led into it gently like that, they understand it. And I do think that the market is a lot broader than what we're actually getting right now from the really hardcore players. And it's like, we don't expect them to necessarily build up the type of skills that are going to let them be competitive against the hardcore players, but I think that there's still plenty of people. Well, the analogy that really is good is like sports. You know, I want the game to be an activity. Like people can go play basketball or volleyball or whatever. You know, it's like you have professionals and you have people that are really serious and, you know, that are very intense and focused about it. But it should be something that people can just do and have fun. And that's really what I want for this entire game. I don't want the game to be something that, like you say, I beat Quake Arena. You know, you can do that. You can get to the highest rank. You can finish all the arenas and all that. But I want it to be something that people just, you know, you wind up having installed on your computer just so that you can sit down. It's like you feel like it, you jump off and you play a game. It's something that doesn't have a beginning and an end. It's a pastime. And that really is fundamentally different than the movie-oriented games. And I think that a lot of computer gaming has almost been, you know, has been, had a disservice done to it by the focus of thinking that the natural evolution of a game is a movie, and, or even an action setting, because they really are different media, and there are some things that have been done well like that, but games don't have to be like that. And it's like you can look back at like games before it became possible to throw that much media at them, and a lot of them were just things where you'd sit down and have fun. You'd go and play it, and it wasn't even a matter of like necessarily beating it or getting it to the end. You know, the game should be fun for the path that you take along it, not that you force your way through it for the cookie at the end, which is, you know, the way a lot of things have been done. Now again, it's like movie-type games or games that are plot and story and mission-driven and everything have, you know, they're a fine style of things and they have a place, but I think that we can get a lot more play value out of something that's a steady state. And I think it can fit better for the development process in a lot of ways.
Sure. I spoke to you quite some time ago and said about this notion of bots. It had never programmed a bot before, so, you know, how was that going to be an issue for the team? And you said to me, well, it's just a programming issue and we've got some good programmers. And after speaking with Tom Cash for that long and seeing the bots in action, I'd say you've succeeded to the point of making a bot that was very good.
I actually wouldn't say we've succeeded yet. The bots are, I think, the most dismal part of the project right now. And
I found a good player in a level that was quite mad.
Mm-hmm.
What I wanted to get back to was the first levels. What other things do you think you can do to lead a player into?
Well, the situation with the bots right now is I'm probably, after we release the test at the end of next month, I'm going to take over the bot tactical work, because we're just not happy with how all the bots are. But
this is high level.
The navigation stuff is finally almost done, but the tactical stuff about how they actually behave, when they're in a combat situation. Because that's where most of the real character of the stuff is going to come out. Some of the stuff that I'm beginning to set up for that, it's like I'm pretty much going to tie up the rest of the stuff and then start working on that, because that is the area that's probably furthest behind on the project. And the rest of the stuff's come along pretty well. We're going to have some of the stuff that, like, I think the fundamental aspect of, like, watching humans play, you know, playback demos and analyzing the stuff. I mean, there's the high-level strategic decisions, but, like, a lot of the stuff that makes people feel human is, like, the very low-lying tactical thing of, like, the aiming curves. And different people have different aiming curves for, like, the amount of degrees that they're trying to aim and the standard deviation across what they actually get versus what they wished for. And I'm going to collect just a bunch of real-life data from various people on that, because it's just going to be interesting to see, like, the difference between, like, my aiming curve and Thresh's aiming curve and stuff like that. Because the way the bots fire right now, there's a Gaussian distribution to their aiming shot, but they don't behave the way real people aim. Like, one of the test rooms that I started setting up to collect some of this information is just a box room with 8 spawn points in it. You give the players infinite ammo, and you just let them run around and watch them, like, run and shoot at each other. And Like the current bots, they've got, you know, they're not perfectly they've got an aiming accuracy, but basically that means that, you know, they've got a Gaussian distribution of some spread around where they're trying to aim. But that's not the way humans aim, because like if you stand still, the bot will sit there and fire, sometimes hitting you, sometimes missing you, where with a real player, if you're, you know, as you're moving, they're estimating where you're going to go and they're trying to aim there, but they, you know, their hand motion isn't as accurate as their intention, so there's some distribution across there. But as soon as you stopped moving, then, you know, their moves focus in down, and then they're just drilling you after they've finally settled down. A lot of things on the aiming curve for the easy bots will be significant things to make them just really, really bad. I mean, we can make bots that are incredibly bad. You know, we can lower their health, lower their movement speed, so they're always walking around. And some of the things that we're going to do specifically to help the beginning players, the sense of a 360-degree environment is the most confusing thing for beginners. Mm-hmm. So it's the intention to actually have bots say turn around, you know, when you're, you know, when they're behind you at the beginning, when you've got somebody that's that bad. The way I'm really happy with the setup that we've got laid out for the single player, like the ranking and arena completion stuff, where the basic plan is you start off with we'll let you choose your initial rank, so you don't, you know, so that really good players don't have to play through all the morons at the beginning. But you choose a rank estimate. So at the beginning, you have four arenas open to you that are all like super easy ones, you know, nothing challenging. When you've beaten an arena and you come in first place on it, then, you know, it's checked off. You can keep playing the same arena forever if you want, you know, and you can keep playing against different bots on there, or you can sue. After you've checked off the four levels, it opens up four new levels. But each time you go into a level, it populates it with bots that are at a skill level appropriate for what your current ranking is. Now, this has a really important advantage that's, I think, going to work out really well for the gameplay, which means that if you completely suck, you know, and you're not getting any better, you know, you keep playing the level and you keep getting beat, it will keep throwing easier and easier bots in there against you, which means that eventually it will, you know, it will throw the bots into the level that stand there, walk very slowly, announce their presence, and, you know, shoot once a second. So the idea is that it will never get to a point where a player can't beat a level, because no matter how bad they are, it's going to be able to put bots eventually in. After you've lost three times in a row, it will have, like, ratcheted your ranking down to the point where it's putting in really inane, stupid bots. But this separates the aspects of the game into two axes here. Actually, we've got a third axis with the awards. But the first axis is just getting through the levels, where you have to come in first on all four levels to get access to the next four levels. You can always go back and play previous ones, but this means that everyone, no matter how bad they are, if they're persistent, will be able to see all the arenas in the game, which fulfills one of my goals about making sure all of our media is actually used. So even, you know, the benchmark that I tell people is, think about your dad playing. You know, you've given the level to your father, set him down on his computer, and it's like, he should be able to get through and play the levels and get through it. And eventually his ranking still might be like 99th out of 100, but with enough perseverance, after having played a bunch of the levels, he'll be able to eventually mark off the levels and get through all of them. So we've got one track there at the end where, you know, you're a grizzled old veteran when you've gotten through all the levels. You may still suck, but you've been around the block a few times. The other axis is the actual ranking, where all of the bots are, you know, are ranked based on their skill, and the player is stuck in there amongst it, and every kill adjusts ranking based on, you know, who you were killed by or who you killed in the relative rankings. So most people will hit a ceiling where we would expect that only 1 in 1,000, if that, probably less, would ever be able to, like, actually get the number one ranking, because the bots can be made, you know, inhumanly accurate, inhumanly fast reaction times and all that. But the idea would be that there should always be something that's tougher than you, unless you're somebody like Thresh or Rix that are at the very top of the, you know, the kind of the professional style players. So that's an axis that people won't necessarily get through, but we don't have media tied up in that. That's just like a text file full of parameters. So, I mean, that's great. It still gives somebody, they can finish the entire thing, and they've still got stuff to strive for, even in the single-player aspect of it. And then the third axis that we've got is awards, where I don't know if you caught any of it while you were playing, but we've got we've got things that happen on exceptional events. Like, if you make two accurate railgun shots in a row, it says impressive, and it keeps a little reward check there. And, like, killing two people with one rocket, you know, gives, like, a destruction, and a few things like that, where these are going to be, like, little... You've got your ranking, which is your overall ranking against the other bots, but then you get, like, little award flags on this stuff. So... as you've played through the game, you may get towards the end, finish all the levels. You might have a ranking of, say, 43rd, but you like camping with the railgun, so you've got, you know, a whole stream of impressive award beads and stuff. So we've got, like, different ways, you know, different axes that people can actually take enjoyment out of the game there. And we've actually found that already, especially with the railgun stuff, where people will play not necessarily in the most effective, lethal killing machine way, but because they want that impressive. You know, it's like, instead of switching to a more appropriate weapon, they'll be, like, backing off trying to get the person like that. And that's fun. I mean, that's been a good addition, where it's not just a matter of necessarily, you know, your score and your ranking and all that. There's these other things that you can get out of it. You know, like going out of your way to say, this is an opportunity for me to go ahead and, like, grab two people, kill two people with a super shotgun, you know, and choosing to go for that, which I think is when that got in just fairly recently, and we think it's been a really good addition.
Is this in some way trying to sort of bring multiplayer and the sort of joy of multiplayer and the internet to the masses like that?
We do think that it's going to generally bring a lot more people into the style of competitive play. Now, I mean, it's, again, more like activity, you know, and pastime rather than necessarily, like, hardcore competitive. I again do liken it to just other activities that people do, where most things that people do for leisure, you know, as a leisure activity, are not things that you battle through to the end. You know, it's something you pick up as, like, you know, a hobby, or, you know, something that you just want to do. And that's what we hope the game kind of makes more explicit, where before, in the previous games, it had kind of been that came almost incidentally with the main game. You know, the main game is fight your way through, beat the monsters, get to the end, you know, accomplish stuff. But the pastime and activity that came along with it in the community was, you know, a byproduct of the way the game was set up and all that. And the idea here is to pretty much just formalize it and say, you know, this byproduct is now the central focus of it. And, you know, we've looked at all the enjoyment that people have been able to get out of, you know, out of that style of it. And, you know, it's certainly viable, and I think it's arguable that it may actually be a, you know, a better game like that. You know, not to everyone. It's not to everyone's taste, but in terms of what we can do for the, you know, for the people buying the game, I mean, how much value we can give them, I think that it's definitely arguable that it will be a, you know, a better game like that. That in terms of, like, enjoyment hours per dollar spent, that might be the most efficient way to do it. But some people just won't like it. I mean, some people really like the, and I empathize with this a lot, where to some people the single player first person shooter game is like a personal exploration of another world. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of, like, the magical feel of, like, being in another place and, like, experiencing something new. Like, one of the big joys in a first-person adventure, you know, adventure like that is, like, coming across, opening a door, walking out, and seeing something totally cool that you've never seen before. And that's great feedback, you know. That's a first-order experience of the game. And, you know, the different combat triumphs and everything are also, like, a big part of the game, you know, beating down the big monster. But, unfortunately, there's, like, the negative side of that is that if you make something challenging where you get a good reward from there, you generally force people to save and restore the game a few times, which is clearly not in the interest of, like, having a really good time. But, I mean, I still like the first-person standard genre like that. It's not going to go away. There's going to be plenty of companies that are going to continue to pursue that, and, you know, we're going to see bigger and bigger budgets thrown at it. Yeah, and there's going to be plenty of good stuff to be done with all that. But I especially don't think that it's the right thing for us as a relatively small company to be pushing, because the time demands are just going to get worse and worse. And I would much rather we produce two games that people have a lot of fun with, you know, over the course of 3 years, than one game that took 3 years to write. I mean, just no contest at all.
What sort of system requirements are you shooting for at the end? It strikes me that there's quite a few features that people would identify with Unreal in terms of visual quality. what I saw was fairly difficult to tell, given the machines. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the kind of thing that people could expect?
We have a large degree of scalability where you can... there's just a ton of things that you can knock down. I mean, you can go... you can certainly knock down the resolution and texture quality like you've always been able to. You can also bias the levels of detail, so everything uses coarser models and the curves are subdivided less. You can turn off certainly like the dynamic lights like you've previously been able to. A lot of the items are composed of multiple pieces where you can actually, if you just care about speed, you can turn off all the rings and halos around things. And you can actually go into a... Brian doesn't have this quite finished yet, but there's we've got all the data set up so we can actually go into a mode where we're rendering the entire world with without light maps, just with like vertex shaded stuff, which takes it back to a single pass game, which on slower cards makes all the difference in the world. On there, it looks crappier. You know, it looks like Forsaken or something like that, where you've got the big smooth sheets over that. But you know, that's another thing that. Because we made the decision that the gameplay was going to be, that it wasn't necessarily going to be pushing out the gigantic scenes, we're concentrating more on speed and the scalability there. That's a decision that I think is okay, where a lot of people with slower cards and systems will just run in single pass mode, and it'll run a lot faster.
There's been some interesting ideas tossed around, and that sort of one of them would be a preset for rules on things. Like one of them that says this is applicable for your usual deathmatch, and there's a competition set. Mm-hmm. Strikes me that might also. I mean, one of the problems with tweaking to get you know, a first person shooter to run at an acceptable speed on maybe some mm-hmm. lower end hardware is a little too. Little more technical than it needs to be.
Yes.
And perhaps that just some general preset there.
Yeah, we can have a few basic sets, and unfortunately there's a lot of things that just plain are complicated, like, you know, you can only enable trilinear if you're on this set of cards, you know, you can't enable the highest quality textures if you're on this type of cards because the performance will be really bad, and we've got some like automatic heuristics in there where if you're on a Voodoo card, we automatically like notch the textures down one level, and we turn off some features on some other cards like the Rage Pro that doesn't support quite everything we need, but it is just kind of complicated in there. I mean, we can make some of it a lot easier where we can have some basic things. You know, I want it to look as good as possible. You know, we'll have our standard settings, which is like down one notch on texture quality, running at 640, non-trilinear, and all effects turned on except for maybe light flares. And we can have like a go fast thing, which notches the textures down again, notches the resolution down, turns off some other stuff. But there's like this page full of options you can check. I mean, we can have like three default options that are sets of those, but people... the intention is that our standard way that don't know what they're doing are probably just going to play the game the way it comes out of the box without messing with any of those options. And then maybe if they say this is going kind of slow, they go in there and say make the game run faster and it tweaks some other things. But it's tough because it is very dependent on the video card. Like the different options that have a great effect on one card may have like next to no effect on another one.